Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Harvey Weinstein, Roy Moore, Louis C.K., and now it seems countless others all accused of sexual harassment, abuse. The floodgates have opened, and countless women and men are sharing their stories, a landslide of Me Toos, calling out those in power and demanding change. Could this be it, the moment when everything changes? This hour on Point, have we reached a tipping point on sexual abuse and harassment? You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Do you feel a turning point? Is this it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Let's start with that Roy Moore story that's blown up so big in the last few days. The Republican Senate candidate in Alabama has been accused of sexual misconduct by four women, including an allegation that he molested a 14-year-old when he was 32. Joining me now from Birmingham, Alabama, is Lita Gore, reporter for the Alabama Media Group covering national political politics. Lita, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you with us.
Hi, Tom.
Can we listen to just a little bit of the back and forth on this, if you'd be kind enough? This is Roy Moore himself, the Senate candidate, denying the allegations of sexual misconduct. This was a Veterans Day meeting over the weekend for the Mid-Alabama Republican Club Saturday in Vestavia Hills, Alabama. Here's Roy Moore.
The Washington Post published yet another attack on my character and reputation in a desperate attempt to stop my political campaign for the United States Senate. These attacks involve a minor, and they are completely false and untrue.
Completely false and untrue, says Roy Moore. But the Washington Post did a lot of reporting on this, and it's right out there. You've got other politicians, Republicans, saying, well, time to go. Here was Pennsylvania Republican Senator Pat Toomey saying Roy Moore should step aside from Alabama's Senate race.
This is a terrible situation. A nearly 40-year-old allegation. We'll probably never know for sure exactly what happened. But from my point of view, I have to say, I think the accusations have more credibility than the denial. I think it would be best if Roy would just step aside.
And responses from Alabama. Here's a couple. Pat Hurst, an Alabama resident, talking with the Associated Press, saying, let's wait until he's proven guilty.
He seems like a good guy to me, but now I assume everybody's made some kind of mistake in life. But I wouldn't think he needs to just step aside unless they prove that he is guilty of some bad sexual conduct.
Of course, it's not in a court of law, and you have four grown women now recounting to the Washington Post what happened. They say to them, Stacey Littles lives in Trustville, Alabama, told the Post the allegations have changed her opinion of Roy Moore.
The news changed my perspective of him 100%. I've always thought of him as a good politician on our side for the people, all about us. I'll never want to have anything to do with his beliefs, thoughts, leadership, nothing. I'm totally disgusted.
Lita Gore is with us from Birmingham, Alabama, the Alabama Media Group. Can we tell, Lita, I mean, this vote is coming up. Can we tell how the news of the last several days is affecting Roy Moore's standing in the race?
Well, we've seen two polls. One poll says that he and his Democratic opponent, Doug Jones, are now tied. However, another poll came out today that shows Roy Moore is up by 10 points, which is basically a decline of 1 percentage point from where he was last week. So, we're seeing two very different polls that tell us two very different things.
There was talk of postponing the election, that the governor might step in and postpone it. Is that all finished now, Lita?
Yeah, the governor has said no, she will not postpone it. And interestingly enough, the head of the Republican Party today in Alabama came out and discouraged a write-in campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Discouraged any third-party efforts, really kind of put the hammer down on that, which is interesting to me in that I don't know if she would have done that if she didn't have sort of the support of her board and, the other people she's talking to. So there's obviously not a general push for a write-in campaign.
What about the women who the Post found and talked to them? I mean, it's sort of one way or the other here, right? These things happened or they didn't. Roy Moore is flatly denying that these things, pretty much that these things happened. How are the women and their stories being seen in Alabama, Leah?
Well, he's denied the 14-year, you know, the allegations involving the 14-year-old. The comments on the other three women are much less serious. They're not. They're still strange, but they're much less criminally serious, which is that he dated. And he said, I dated one of these women. I had permission of her mother. You know, they did not go beyond kissing. It's that sort of allegation. If it was those three women, yeah, this would not have been the story that it was, but it's the one 14-year-old that obviously makes it the story. The one thing I keep hearing people say is, oh, well, this was common knowledge. This was common knowledge. I really don't agree with that statement, because I've worked in this state for 25, 26 years, and this, you know, the thought that Roy Moore had an issue with young girls, it may have been common knowledge in a certain set, but it was not certainly common knowledge to the vast number of people I spoke to or I have been around. You know, that idea is not correct.
What about the idea that maybe this is not a big deal? You sort of infamously or famously now had Jim Ziegler, the state auditor of Alabama, comparing these relationships to Mary and Joseph. And he said, take Joseph and Mary. Mary was a teenager and Joseph was an adult carpenter. They became parents of Jesus. There's nothing immoral or illegal here, maybe just a little bit unusual. Is that just Jim's view, or is that...
Yes, let me go ahead and say that right now. Mm-hmm. Not only did I have not heard one person say that was a good statement, that they thought that was the right address. In fact, the Southern Baptist Convention has come out and said no. You know, that is not correct. No. So Ziegler's a very colorful character, been around a long time, ran many times and lost. So there's, you know, people have a tendency to dismiss a lot of what he says. Interestingly enough, the question in this state is overwhelmingly, first of all, we didn't have a great candidate to start with. It's very much like the presidential race. People did not see Roy Moore as a perfect candidate. He was a very flawed candidate, as was Luther Strange, for totally different reasons. But the number one question you get among Republicans in this state is, why did it take so long, and why did this story come out now? And until those two issues, and I don't think they can be addressed adequately to answer the questions of somebody whose beliefs are already set.
Okay.
But that is the number, well, those two things are what are being used not to dismiss the claims, but to cast doubt on those claims.
But is it, I mean, Roy Moore only became the candidate a few weeks ago, so... and he's had his troubles over the years in the Supreme Court.
He's been he is one of the most high profile people in the state, though, for many, many years.
But he wasn't running for the U.S. Senate, where his opinions, it's one thing to put the Ten Commandments in the courthouse. It's another if you're in Washington and your vote could have a major impact. I guess that would draw media attention. So it does. The timing doesn't seem that strange to me. They came when he became a candidate for national office out of Alabama. Yeah. And here, boom, here's the story.
Yeah, in this state, though, he was, you know, second in high profile. Well, third. We'll put Alabama's football coach first.
Okay.
And we'll put the governor second.
Yeah.
And we'll put Roy Moore third, as far as high profile figures. Now, that's just in this state. And he certainly, let me say, you know, he has certainly been written about his other controversies. There's a lot more besides this. And that's what... you know, has drawn concerns is if these allegations had never come out, he still has major flaws as a candidate.
But this is a man who's been in his public life so wrapped around the Bible and has been put his evangelical Christianity and his judgments of many other groups harshly front and center. And then Alabamans are reading about him taking a 14-year-old home to his house and stripping her down to her underwear and having her fondle. You know, that contrast doesn't it?
Well, it's very bizarre. But I will tell you this, and I was told this point blank over this weekend. Mm-hmm. And I also think there is this general conception, incorrectly, this happened a long time ago. You know,
it was a long time ago, but still.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. But the number one thing that people will say is, I don't agree with what Roy Moore did, allegedly did, but I don't agree with what Roy Moore did, but Doug Jones is worse. And I've heard it.
Worse in what terms, Leta?
That they point to the pro-choice issue, the abortion issue.
I see.
That is the number one issue, which is so ironic when you compare the race, you know, compare the candidates.
Yeah.
But the Doug Jones has been very open about his beliefs and where he stands on that issue. And that is a quote, "But Doug Jones is worse," I've heard several times over the weekend.
What would it take, if in terms of pressure from Republicans in Washington or in Alabama, for Roy Moore to step out of the race, to drop out?
Oh, I don't think Roy Moore will ever step out of this race. I think you could have footage broadcast. I don't think Roy Moore will ever step out.
You mean
of this
even
race.
If there were video footage of what, of
no.
course, there won't be, he wouldn't leave
no,
it.
He wouldn't. No. Mm-mm.
Well, then, what does his denials mean? If I mean, you're saying even if it were true,
I'm not saying even if it were true, he wouldn't step out. I'm saying in his mind, he would never step out. You know, he is not the kind of person. First of all, if you're in politics, your ego has to be pretty healthy. So, you know, he is not ever going to concede this situation.
Are you confident that he would be seated in Washington by his fellow Republicans if he arrives to the Senate?
Yeah, no, that to me is actually the sticking point. I think that's where we're going to see some change, is that if the Senate refuses to seat him. And I think that is a very, very real possibility that not many people have gotten to. And then how do we deal with that when that happens? The thing in Alabama is a lot of people, you know, this Jeff Sessions and Richard Shelby were our senators for a long time. It was almost just a rubber stamp.
Yep.
They went to D.C.
Yep.
And so you got people now paying attention, and they, Alabamians, do not want to be the state that hands the Senate back to the Democrats. They don't want to do it. And, you know, the thing I told somebody earlier is, heaven help us, the headlines the day after this election. Because we're, you know, it's going to be, if Roy Moore wins, look at who they sent to the Senate. Then it's going to be up to the Senate to decide. And Richard Shelby has come out and said, if these allegations are true, you know, Roy Moore should step aside.
Wow.
So he's kind of made his thoughts known.
Yeah. Of course, I mean, there's the reporting already. I don't know what they want for truth, but there's women saying exactly what they say happened with them. Lita Gore is with the Alabama Media Group. Lita, it's always great to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. Enjoyed it.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Stop the violence, stop the rape. The chant there outside the Dolby Theater in Hollywood yesterday. Marchers chanting as they made their way through Hollywood. Of course, what's going on in the last, couple of months now goes way beyond Hollywood. We're talking this hour about the wave of sexual abuse and harassment allegations right now and how it could, may, will change the way things have been in this country for a very long time. It is not just, of course, the politicians, and it is not just Hollywood actresses coming out talking about big producers and others. We had just yesterday Ali Raisman, 6-time Olympic gold medalist in gymnastics, 60 Minutes interviewing her, aired yesterday. She told correspondent Jonathan LaPook that the national team doctor, this is the U.S. Olympic team doctor, Larry Nassar, sexually abused her.
I was in denial. I was like, I don't even know what to think. You don't want to let yourself believe, you know, I am a victim of sexual abuse. Like, it's really not an easy thing to let yourself believe that.
You're saying you were sexually abused?
Yes, absolutely.
By the national team doctor?
Yes.
While you were out there representing your country?
Yes.
One after another, after another, after another. It's gone on and on, and lots of women saying me too in social media, which has become a very important part of what's going on here. Anita Hill, of course, became a big national figure way back in 91 when she 1991 when she accused Supreme Court Justice nominee Clarence Thomas, who had been her boss at the U.S. Department of Education and Equal Opportunity Commission, of sexual harassment. She was at a CNN town hall last week, Thursday. She was asked if the Me Too campaign, all of this may could lead to lasting real change.
Do you feel like we're at a tipping point right now?
I absolutely do. You know, I've been in this for 26 years now, and I've seen stories come and go, and some of them are quite powerful. I've seen movements come and go, and some are quite powerful. I've not seen something like this.
So what about this moment after Roy Moore and Louis C.K. now and all the rest, Harvey Weinstein and Bill O'Reilly and Kevin Spacey and on, what next here? Can you see an end to this, or is there a lot more reckoning to come? And do you feel a fundamental reset underway in the rules of engagement, in how men, women, everybody is on notice, expected to behave? Should have all along, but, you know, many, it is very obvious, have not, did not. What's this moment? How much change do you see coming out of this? Is this a real tipping point? With us right now from New York is Erin Gloria Ryan, senior editor at The Daily Beast, former managing editor of Jezebel. It's a blog geared toward women, formerly run by Gawker Media. She's been writing about this. You can link to her work at our website, onpointradio.org. Erin Ryan, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for having me.
And with us from Eugene, Oregon, is Elizabeth Liz Tippett, professor at the University of Oregon School of Law, former employment law attorney. She's been looking at all this. And Liz, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Happy to be here.
I mean, you look at this very practically on the ground. You've got all these really high-profile cases and, you know, heads just spinning over how much has come out in the last couple of months here. And many women feeling really empowered by this after many years when they were not believed or couldn't see a way to bring this forward. Do you see this moment practically changing the way all this works, Liz, in employment circumstances and beyond, in the workplace and beyond?
I do. I think this moment is going to force employers to think harder about whether they want to keep a documented harasser on the payroll. In the past, employers were tempted to keep especially high-powered men who had engaged in harassment on the payroll Yep. because the courts tended not to scrutinize the level of punishment very much. But now employers have to think, you know, this might be public 5 months from now, 5 years from now, and will we be able to defend the decision that we made? And they're quaking in their boots.
I mean, you've got the real direct legal concerns there. Erin Ryan, it's in a context where social media is amplifying women's testimony about, you know, their witness about what they've been through and turning it into a real force here. Do you see a kind of empowerment? If this is about power dynamics, are we witnessing a change in that right now, Erin?
Yeah, I think if we want to trace where this came from, to me it seems like it's a direct response to the election of President Trump after he, you know, after his comments where he bragged about sexual assault went viral and he got elected anyway. There was this kind of upswell of kind of female, I guess, frustration and anger. And you saw it in the Women's March and you kind of felt it kind of vibrating, I guess, just below the surface since Trump has been inaugurated. And I think that this moment is this kind of outpouring of, and it's a reaction to something that happened over a year ago. What I think is really interesting, you mentioned social media. It used to be that if a journalist wanted to cover a story of sexual abuse or harassment, they had to either A, know where to look and who to talk to, or B, have somebody proactively reach out to them.
Yeah.
Now, Twitter is this sort of, it's kind of a source for tips, even if they didn't necessarily intend to tip a journalist. If a journalist sees that a famous person is being accused of sexual harassment, they can use Twitter and follow up on that tip.
So, I mean, that means there's fodder everywhere now, and just one big name after another that's been out there. You know, one thing is the legal fear that Liz Tippett describes that companies will feel, and so they may feel they have to act in a different way. At a basic cultural level, Erin, does it change the power dynamic? Does it portend? Do you think it's not going to be the way it was starting in 2017?
Yeah, I do think it doesn't. And I, you know, I have a lot of friends who are men, believe it or not, despite the fact that I'm a feminist. I have a lot of male friends who have reached out to me. A lot of male friends who work in the entertainment industry, who work in media, who work in comedy, have reached out to me kind of privately over the last month, because this has only been going on for a month and a week, and I had to check it. I think it was October 5th that the Weinstein
story
ran.
Seems like more, doesn't it?
I know. It feels like 6 months to a year this has been going on, but it's been just a little over a month. But I've had men reach out to me and tell me that, you know, they're worried, how do I get a date now? How do I act? And what I tell them is, you know, you just have to consider that maybe you don't always get to ask women out in every context anymore. Mm-hmm. That's not something you have a right to do. You don't get to ask women out at work because they're working. You don't get to ask somebody out at a bar and then, you know, turn them away or ignore them rebuffing you because they don't want to talk to you. Sometimes women don't want to talk to men, and that's the thing that they're kind of having to face right now.
Well, I mean, we're getting right down in the sort of fundamental way that the sexes relate there. Of course, we've seen the Kevin Spacey stories and more. It's not just men and women. It can go in lots of directions here. We've got a lot of callers for the two of you. Meryl in Dowelltown, Tennessee. Meryl, what do you see happening here? What's going on?
A lot of it is a matter of power dynamics and advertising and the urge to make money and to be in control. I think that in a lot of our advertising, women and girls, unfortunately, are sexualized and commodified and infantilized,
yep,
while men are dominating and maybe kindly accommodating. Even the terminology that we use when we talk about men and girls can be demeaning.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the social messages that we get shape attitude towards women, for men and for women both.
So, Meryl, may I ask, do you think that the power of this wave of revelations and the power of women offering their witness, their testimony online all over the place, is that enough to counteract the baked-in cultural stuff you're talking about there? Could it turn it around?
Only if men will listen and hear what we're saying and change their behavior and be willing to share the power that they have.
Meryl, I appreciate your call. Liz Tippett, I mean, you're in law school here. That's where the rubber meets the road legally, but what about, do you see, is it just fear of lawsuit? Is there something bigger that could be accomplished here? Do you see it happening, Liz?
I think one of the most important things is accountability. What we've seen from so many of these harassment stories is men being accused of harassment, and then there being documentation and evidence to support that harassment, and then employers doing nothing. So much of the scandal that we see is the fact that these men were kept on the payroll despite prior accusations of harassment and investigation and documentation that supported the victim's claims. And I think that's really what we will expect to change, is that employers have to rethink what they're doing.
It's just been more and more. Sandra in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Sandra, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay.
I am a mental health therapist, and I would like to speak kind of on behalf of the psychological part of it.
Mm-hmm.
When everybody in the media are questioning why these women took so long, 40 years, especially with Mr. Moore, the psychological part of it is that, these girls were very young, and they suppressed this feeling, and they feel like shame. And with all of that, and some by later, and, you know, 40 years is not long, because they felt now empowered with everything that's happening, with the changes, with the media, with all these cases that are coming to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
It allows the victim to speak and allows them to have a voice. So it's not like, why did they wait for 40 years? Sometimes 40 years is shame and trauma that they are not dealing in a healthy way. And when they see that other women are also going through the same thing from all walks of life,
mm-hmm,
it gives them a chance to have a voice for the first time.
Sandra, we hear that, and that's the voice of a therapist out of Fort Lauderdale. I mean, Aaron, the permission and voice, those are big deals. We see this in the Roy Moore case coming up. Of course, the Washington Post went out and found it. I'm looking right now. There are fresh reports out that Senate leader Mitch McConnell is saying that he believes the women who have accused Roy Moore of inappropriate sexual contact. He says Republicans are looking at a write-in option in Alabama. Maybe some kind of turning point there. What about the voices being given now, Aaron, even to those for whom the abuse happened a long time ago?
I think that's a really important point. And the caller just said all walks of life, women from all walks of life. And I think that right now we're seeing people that are sort of at the top of the economic echelons, for the most part, coming forward. We see famous actresses, people
being,
who are
being called out or speaking up, you mean? Yeah.
People that are speaking up are people that are empowered to speak up because in a lot of cases, their job entitles them to a platform, which most people don't have. But what's going to be really interesting is to see the trickle-down effect where people like Roy Moore's accusers in Alabama and, you know, a waitress in Nebraska and maybe a healthcare worker in Minnesota feel empowered to speak up because they've seen other women do it and be successful in doing it. The vast majority of women in America do not work in media. They do not work in entertainment. Mm-hmm. They've never had any encounter with you know, Harvey Weinstein or Brett Ratner or, you know, a famous celebrity chef. They're just regular people. And yep. I think that is where the impact of this movement, which has yet to be seen, will be the most important and the most relevant.
And still to come, you say. Joe in Newport, Tennessee. Joe, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks so much for taking the call.
Yes.
I'm a retired family therapist. I worked at the Rape Crisis Center in Knoxville. Child sexual abuse and sexual assault is epidemic in our country. One out of three girls before they're 18 is a victim of sexual abuse or assault. One out of five boys. It's family violence is a huge problem. And the women that are speaking up now are so brave and courageous. If you ever got into the system and went to prosecute, you get raped again.
What do you mean by that?
The legal says they rake you over the coals.
Yeah.
It is just an incredibly horrific, disrespectful experience.
Joe, may I ask you, I hear that. May I ask you, this social media kind of means of calling out powerful people has worked really well with high-profile men. Do you think that could work all the way down into the kind of family fabric that you're talking about there? Or is that immune to the wave that we're seeing sweep the country right now, Joe?
Tom, I really don't know about that. And I know social media will help. And the more voices and the more support you get, the more people will come out and say, this happened to me. I think the men in particular, but women have also been perpetrators, but at a much smaller percentage, need to take responsibility and say, you know, I did this. I am responsible. I abused this young person, and I need to make amends, and I need to stop defending and stop denying something that is pervasive in our country. And more power to all the people that are coming out and saying, this happened to me. And to say 40 years is a long time, it's not. There are, you know, people, perpetrators say, I'll kill you if you say anything. I'll kill your family. I'll torture you. I mean,
Hey, Joe, hang on. Aaron, Joe wants men to come out on their own, not wait here. How do men do that? I mean, it's everybody who's come out, well, I don't know about Roy Moore, but Kevin Spacey, he's out of his films. Louis C.K., he's out of his show. Harvey Weinstein, right. He's out of his company. I mean, it looks like come out and boom, you get your head lopped off.
Yeah, I think that it's probably a tall order to ask men to come out of their own volition. But it is interesting to see how men own up to or don't own up to charges when they're brought up. I was looking today at some of the things that people have said in response, because there's really a litany of apologies and statements in response to these accusations. I was looking at Brett Ratner's statement.
The Hollywood producer.
Yeah, producer who was accused of sexual misconduct and sexual assault by several women. His statement said, we are confident that his name will be cleared once the current media frenzy dies down and people can objectively evaluate the nature of these claims. Which is a really condescending and belittling way to respond to frenzy. What are you talking about? And then if you take a look at Louis C.K.'s statement, it's completely, he just puts his hands up He says these stories are true. Those are the first words of the statement, and he ends by saying that he's going to back away for a while. So I think it's definitely a tall order to expect men to come out themselves, but I do think it's possible for men, once their misconduct is discovered, to own up to it and decide, yes, what I did was wrong, and yes, what I did will not be repeated.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And we're asking this hour whether the wave of sexual abuse and harassment allegations right now could, may, will constitute a real fundamental change in the way things have been in this country for a long, long time. Elizabeth Liz Tippett is with us, professor at the University of Oregon School of Law. Erin Ryan is here, senior editor at the Daily Beast. Naomi Alderman joins us in just a moment. Her latest book is called The Power. It's about very empowered young women. We'll look at that. You can join us. Are we going to get things right here? Are we in the middle right now of accomplishing some major change in power dynamics, in expectations and norms? Jody in Cohasset, Massachusetts. Hi, Jody. You're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much.
Mm-hmm.
You opened the show by asking, is this it?
Yeah.
Is this a tipping point? Is
yeah.
this a point at which things are going to change? And my suggestion is that it depends on what the definition of it is.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Meaning that, yes, I do believe this is the tipping point, and this tip began with the appalling election of a sexual predator, a confessed sexual predator, and women all over the world basically saying, what? Are you kidding? And rising up. So it, in this instance, is yes, I do believe things will change. Men are being called out. They're being accused. Hopefully there will be criminal repercussions and charges and convictions. And so men all over the world, but especially in our country, are quaking in their boots.
Hey, Jody, can you feel it already? I don't know. I don't know what circumstances you live or work in, but can you sort of feel a shift when you're working with or next to a man? Do you feel like, well, I've got a little more leverage here than I had a month and a half ago?
Yes, not in my workplace, because I enjoy a harassment-free workplace. But I also spent 10 years in Los Angeles as a young person pursuing an acting career, and I was molested and abused and for countless times. So, but yes, there is a difference now. However, the other definition of it is, you know, is this going to change the way boys and men think about and view women? And the answer to that is no, unless and until boys are raised and educated in every facet of life to that all others, whether they be women, people of different races, people of different origins and so forth, that all others have dignity, are worthy of respect, and are not commodities to be abused.
I mean, that sounds just logical. On the other hand, we know that would constitute a very big change away from a lot of messages that people have had for a long time. Jody, I appreciate your call. One more, and I want to go to Naomi, but Chris in Bowling Green, Kentucky. Chris, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. I want to preface my comment question with this. I'm not an apologist for anybody that has done something inappropriate.
Okay.
But my concern is that someone will use, quote, the hashtag MeToo for, for nefarious purposes. I mean, so far, a lot of the accusations have come out of Hollywood and in the political arena. And we know that there are no, everyone has, there are no hidden agendas in Hollywood or in Washington. I'm going to
I don't know about that, but what is your concern, Chris? What are you getting? Where do you think this is headed?
Well, somebody has now accused George Sakai of being a sexual predator. Okay, George Sakai is one of the most outstanding gay men in America. He's a role model for both straight and male, and gay men. And now he's being accused. And the rebuttal is, it's fake news coming from Russia. So
what are you raising the witch trial, the witch hunt fear here? Is that where you're going, Chris?
Yeah, yes. It's a witch. I'm not saying that anybody that has come forward is attacking someone for nefarious purposes.
Yeah.
But I'm saying the possibility does exist and should be examined.
Chris, I appreciate your call. Aaron, how do you respond?
Well, surprisingly, I don't think that Chris is totally off the mark. I think it's possible, given the fact that, you know, now it's clear that if women come forward with these accusations rather than not being believed as they were in the past, now they're going to be believed. And it is entirely possible that at some point somebody would decide to weaponize that against somebody who hadn't done something. It would be really naive for us to pretend that that was not possible. But what I will say is, if we take a look at, I think one of the OGs of this movement was Gretchen Carlson, surprising feminist hero
Fox
Gretchen
News.
Carlson.
She was with us just a couple of weeks ago, yeah.
Right. And she meticulously and over the course of years documented sexual harassment and misconduct at Fox News. And because she was so diligent about documenting, she was able to bring down a kind of unsinkable media guy, Roger Ailes.
Yeah.
And so that Gretchen Carlson has come public and talked about, you know, the way that she handled herself and the way that women who are in similar situations in their workplaces should handle themselves. And she's, you know, she said document, document, document. And I'm sure that journalists would never, you know, take somebody's random accusations and run with them as though they're true without any proof. And so it's, you know, it's incumbent on people who feel like they're being sexually harassed to speak to somebody about it, to document as much as they can. So if they are questioned, they have a paper trail.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this has become so big so quickly. There's a global element to it as well. Aaron Ryan, Liz Tippett, stand by. Naomi Alderman joins us right now from London. Author, novelist. Her latest book is The Power. It won the Bailey's Prize for Women's Fiction. It's just out in the U.S., a few weeks ago, and it has quite an interesting story at the heart of it. Naomi Alderman, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
You've written some fiction that is paralleling what's going on in the world right now in a pretty potent way. This is about, in your imagined world, young women suddenly have this power, to kind of an electromagnetic power in their very bodies to shock and empower themselves. Do you see this playing out in the real world right now?
Well, it's slightly different in the sense that, as far as I'm aware, young women have not developed the power to electrocute people at will, much as I might wish to give it to them. But certainly what's happening right now, I think, is that women are learning from the model that we have from what's going on in Hollywood about how to put this sort of case together, as Erin was saying, and also about how to work together. So we see women coming forward as a group. We see that you have to find other women to whom similar things have happened. You have to have those conversations in order to be able to come forward with a case that can really bring someone down. So one of the things that my novel is about is that this sort of thing is almost inevitable when there is any kind of power imbalance. What is the power imbalance between men and women? Well, we don't talk about it very much, but the answer is men are physically stronger than women. In a room with a man and a woman talking to each other, the man is going to be, on average, not in every pairing, but on average, is going to be more physically intimidating. And I heard one of your callers earlier saying that we're not educating men and boys well. And I think it's certainly true that we're not teaching boys and young men that it's no fault of theirs, but their physical presence will be more intimidating. Actually, it would be better to have a culture in which men are not expected to be the, as it were, sexual aggressors, to make the first move, to be the ones who are asking people out. Actually, it would be better if we had a culture where women did that more and men hung back in order to not tip this power imbalance over even further.
Do you feel that possibly happening? I mean, it's not as though this hasn't hit Britain. You had your defense minister there, Sir Michael Fallon, resigning over inappropriate flirtation, resigned November 1st. Is this happening? Is the power balance or the expectation of the nature of the interaction shifting, changing?
It's certainly happening all over the world, and yes, it has hit Britain. I think, look, let's be real. Abusive people are not going to suddenly stop abusing tomorrow because of these stories in the media. Predators can be very clever about how they do what they do. I think what's happening is that it's becoming more okay to speak your suspicions or the things that have happened to you, perhaps to other women, perhaps to people in authority. I don't think that this is the end. Well, as Winston Churchill says, it might be the end of the beginning. It might be that now we're able to start to have these conversations so that somebody won't be able to go on doing this for 15 years. They'll do it a few times, and then those conversations will be had. I'm hopeful anyway.
Let's go to Bill in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Bill, thank you for calling. You're on the air. Oh, lost him. Marinella in Montgomery, Alabama. Marinella, you're on. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
What I wanted to say is that we live in a society where we have lost our respect for the human person at a very deep level. We have lost our respect for the dignity of every human being. And so this is resulting in the objectification and the sexualization of women from a very, very young age. And also the fact that we live in a society where pornography is our daily bread. I'm sure these things are connected to the problems that we see today and to the abuse of women that we see right and left.
Marinella, I appreciate your call as well. Liz, how do we bring this out of the sort of, I mean, right now it's like a grenade, you know, drops and somebody is wiped out of their movie or wiped out of their position, and then another and then another. How do we routinize better interactions and better behavior and get out? I mean, this has its purpose. I get it right now, but it seems like an odd way to proceed over time. People just, you know, dropping like flies as a result of social media. How do we pull this into a more regular conversation to bring this down to normalcy? Normalcy without harassment and abuse.
One of the things that I really liked about what your caller said was remembering the dignity of every person. And one thing I think that has been lost in the conversation around harassment is the importance of inclusion and equal opportunity. My fear is that men will respond to these scandals by saying, well, I'm just not going to invite that woman to this networking meeting. I'm not going to have a business lunch with a woman. That's
too
crazy.
Dangerous.
Mm-hmm. That's discrimination. And so it's important to remind everyone that Title VII of the Civil Rights Act prohibits harassment, but it also demands equal employment opportunity. And so that means that you need to invite women and other underrepresented groups into all of these informal opportunities for advancement in the workplace, like mentoring, like networking, like client development. We need a seat at the table, too, and let's not forget that.
But, I mean, I guess you're right. You have to be real in a way right now, Aaron. You've been writing. Men coming to you and you know, worried. You wrote they want to know where the line is, what they can do to stop it, whether that one encounter they had years back crossed a line. They believe the news reports, you write, Aaron. They believe a problem exists. They believe it's bad. But there's trepidation right now about, you know, Liz doesn't want relationships to be diminished so that women lose opportunity in a different way, Aaron.
Yeah, that's true. And it sort of reminded me of there was a much ridiculed Mike Pence tidbit a few months back where he refused to have meetings with women who weren't his wife. Or, you know, not that he would have meetings with his wife, but he would refuse to have, like, closed-door meetings with female staffers.
And people said, that's ridiculous.
Right. And, you know, I've seen a conservative response at saying, like, women are that treats women as though they're the problem. Like, if you can just keep a woman out of the room, then the harassment won't happen instead of men being the problem. One of the things that I've noticed in conversations with men at different levels of power and success in different industries is the more power and success they have, the more terrified they are. Because I think if we look at what like the Louis C.K. Story that the New York Times ran last week, where I believe five women accused him of sexual creepiness.
Masturbating in front of them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, or asking to masturbate in front of them. And if you look at that, if he were somebody who wasn't as famous as he is, that wouldn't necessarily be a story. It would just be a rumor that everybody
gross was kind or a rumor.
Creep. Mm-hmm. Right. And the more famous you are and the more powerful you are, the lower the threshold for any sort of sexual misconduct being a major news story.
Well, but is that true? So, I mean, if you're just working at the car wash, you don't want somebody, you know, doing what Louis C.K. is alleged to have done.
Right. But the New York Times isn't going to run a front, you know, they're not going to run a blockbuster story on you, and they're not going to, and you're not going to get, you know, banned from all car washes for the next 5 years.
Is it obvious? What were the men asking you? They said they want to know where the line is. What, where was the nuance of their question there, Aaron?
Well, I think a lot of it came to casual sex and dating. And casual sex, like the sort of, you know, maybe they met somebody after a show and they took them home. And how do they make sure that that person isn't going to say in later that somehow they were taken advantage of? Mm-hmm. And my response to that is you don't have to take people home after the show. I don't think people are worried as much about having meetings as they are about having fun. And they're worried that this new groundswell and support for women who say that they've been sexually harassed or assaulted will somehow limit their fun, which is a very, you know, childish way to look at things. But that's
what
just
you're
kind
saying.
Of,
you're saying
kind of
what men don't look for sex. Is that?
No, I'm not saying don't look for sex. I'm just saying that, you know, there are ways to make sure that mm-hmm. the sex you're having is consensual. Don't, mm-hmm. you know, if you are the person that you're going to engage in sexual activity with is drunk, you might want to not do that. Mm-hmm. You might want to avoid doing drugs with someone you just met and then taking them home and having sex with them. There are mm-hmm. things that you can do that kind of muddy the waters between consent and non-consent. And mm-hmm. those things can be avoided pretty easily. It's less fun, but you can avoid those things and avoid probably career-ending accusations as a result.
Naomi, are we getting a glimpse of a new way, a new world here? What do you say?
I really hope so. I think that what we're seeing here is potentially another one of those ratchet moments that we've had across human history. You know, the women's mm-hmm. movement has been working for, let's say, 150, 200 years to make various sorts of ways that we used to think more and more unacceptable. So I find it somewhat encouraging that, for example, even President Trump isn't saying, hey, let's go back to no longer giving women the vote. You know, some things become unacceptable and then we move forward. And I hope we're at one of those points.
Naomi Alderman's terrific new novel is The Power. It's about young women who suddenly find themselves with shocking powers, shall we say, and it kind of changes everything. Maybe we're at one of those moments, maybe right now. Naomi in London, thank you so much for being with us this hour.
Thank you for having me.
The book is The Power. Elizabeth Tippett at University of Oregon School of Law in Eugene, thanks very much for being with us today, Liz.
Thanks, Tom.
And Erin Gloria Ryan, senior editor at The Daily Beast. Erin, great talking with you. Thanks so much for your insights here.
Thanks for having me.
Good luck, everybody. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.